Hi, I'm Nick.
Hi, I'm Thomas.
And this is the Unbossing Podcast.
A show about unleashing the full potential of every organization.
I'm actually kind of your typical corporate girl. Like I did go to business school. I have an MBA. I did start my career in startup because I've always been very entrepreneurial and I wanted to learn and scale fast. And I knew that a great way to do that was also by sometimes doing the untraditional thing. And that is starting in startup where I would have more responsibility from a young age and I could learn just a bit quicker. I also started my career, by the way, in Paris. So it was, again, a good challenge for me to also work in my third language because actually French is my third language. So I always like look to challenge myself, but I did have like a corporate career in mind. Ended up moving back to Belgium. I was indeed the brand manager for a few global brands in FMCG, in beer and cider for Belgium and Luxembourg, which was a lot of fun. Honestly, dream job. I thought I was going to be there for the next God knows how many years still. My future was pretty much planned out. I was going to have this international marketing career. The global headquarters were ready to, you know, take me on and all of that. But then obviously lockdown happened. And as you might know, the beer sector is very much linked to restaurants, bar, cafes, events, nightlife, all those things that unfortunately, and that actually also really does, you know, affect me because obviously I really do love that world. But yeah, we were all in lockdown. We lost a lot of our, you know, turnover and me being someone that is very motivated to work, I had a very hard time then also, of course, accepting that we were all going to be economically unemployed. And this was temporary, of course. But of course, when you want to work and you're suddenly stuck at home for a couple of months, you start doing other stuff in the meantime. You're just like keeping yourself busy, trying to still develop yourself, because I also didn't want to just watch Netflix all day for a few months. You know, like I don't even watch TV. So for me, that was like definitely a no-go. So yeah, what I did, I started just investing in myself. In my personal development, I just tried to see it as an opportunity. And I was like, you know what? I have all this time to do these things that I never have time for. Let's, you know, follow some courses, get a bit better at some things in marketing that I'm not really like fully mastering yet. And because I was spending so much time on my development and in coaching, I was kind of realizing, huh, there's so much things being said that I think I can maybe explain a bit better, or that I have a different opinion on, or in general, like I'm investing so much on all of in all of this, but nothing saying that I also can't be the person doing that. You know, like it's just a matter of doing it at some point. I mean, I indeed had the experience in corporate to say, you know, I have some credibility to be teaching certain things. So that's what I did. I was just kind of, oh, let's do this little side hustle, keep myself busy, start coaching a few people here and there. But that actually went a lot better than I expected. I've always been a bit of a natural coach. Like in general, I think my friends would always say that I'm always been the person that loves, you know, helping people out. And if my friends have a job interview, they're going to be calling me and I'll be prepping them for it. So I just in general always loved, you know, bringing my knowledge to whoever's around me. So it is also something that just very naturally came to me and that I obviously enjoyed. And just like Nick said before, it doesn't feel like work. It's just something that I love. And you are in the end helping someone, right? As a coach, I think as a coach, you have to be in by nature wanting to help someone. Otherwise, it's going to get really hard. So yeah, that went really well. And obviously, the fact that I do come from startups, so I know about building businesses, but I also obviously know about marketing. That was a really good combination for me to indeed kind of scale my business fast. And then in summer, when I was actually back in my corporate job and I was doing both at the same time, I was able to say, hey, I can actually fully rely on this side hustle, quote unquote, because it was, you know, I was generating like three times more than my monthly wage just in my program, my coaching thing that I started 2 months before that, you know. So I was like, well, okay, I'm doing, like, I'm making this much just by working a few hours on weekends and on evenings. And then I'm spending my, you know, full days here. And obviously, money is not the only driver. But at some point, I just couldn't combine both. And unfortunately, in times of crisis, like, you also have to look a bit at, you know, okay, what is for me? Where can I, you know, develop? Because I'm young and I do really want to develop myself. this was scaling so fast. So I wasn't going to give up on my personal dreams for obviously then my corporate job. And that was indeed a bit the ultimate embossing podcast. Embossing podcast, but embossing experience. Not my plan at all. I definitely think I'm an accidental entrepreneur. I mean, I have always been entrepreneurial, but it wasn't my intention to start a company and go full time. Let's put it that way. So yeah, that's a bit, you know, how this year has been. And I now am full time since September, because as you might know, in Belgium, we do have long resignation periods. You don't just, you know, quit one day and you're out. So yeah, quit my job on my birthday in July and I was out in September. And yeah, now things are going really well. And I just started even a second company. So things are developing well. So it's good.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Just recently.
This week, actually, yeah, I set up a second company in the UK with someone else because I have a new project coming. I can't say too much about it yet, but it's definitely quite exciting. And yeah, I'm definitely developing different projects and revenue streams as I go. On the internet, everything's so much more scalable. So it's a completely different ballgame than obviously what I was used to seeing in, let's say, FMCG, which is in the end quite a traditional a marketplace. So
yeah, and physical, yeah,
very physical indeed. Like it's completely and yeah, it's I mean it's scalable, of course, but the yeah you don't have the same turnover per, you know, yeah, client or it's just a completely different ballgame.
Fully agree, Laura. I think the agile on Instagram or on LinkedIn, and also the statements of your clients are just amazing. So it is very, very obvious that you have a unique feel of what your clients need, how you bring them further. Two questions, Laura. What kind of clients do you have? What is usually their business? And how is it possible to find you on the social media?
Okay, so my ideal client is actually female. Not that because I'm against men, of course not, but just because in the end, as a coach, I work very closely with my clients. And sometimes it's a bit easier for me to work through, let's say, limiting beliefs or confidence issues my client might have if they're a woman, because they just will more easily confide into me. I will probably understand them a bit better, because obviously women, for example, overthink and they have like certain things that we just do. And then it's just easier for me to understand. But also, obviously, there's, I think, still a big opportunity for female entrepreneurship. And I really want to be one of the people supporting that as well. I think as a female myself, I just want them to break through those golden cages and really make it happen and be that empowerer. Even though I've actually, both sectors that I worked in were very male oriented. So I actually always had male colleagues and I love that. But it's more about just the female empowerment, I guess. My ideal client is a coach on top of that. So it's a service entrepreneur that is known for her thought leadership in a specific field. I don't have a niche in which field they should be. They can be fitness, health, leadership, IT. Like it's very broad. What matters for me is that they're good at what they do, and that they're not so good at the marketing part. And that's where I want to help them. And really, you know, nail down their brand story, nail down their marketing strategy, but especially help them scale quickly with that indeed power of social media, because indeed it is super powerful. It does have a massive impact. And how you can find me? Well, Laura Hayleet on LinkedIn or Instagram. Instagram is obviously my playground. That's what I teach people. That's where it's still the easiest to build a connection with your audience that goes through so many different channels. I mean, Instagram is the only place that has both a marketplace in it, where you literally have e-shops on someone's page, has stories, has posts, carousels, video, you know, DMs, where you can even go video calling. You can do everything within that app. You literally could, you know, capture someone's attention with your content, build the connection through stories and then direct messages, and then jump on a video call with them and make the sale all within that platform. There's no other platform, I think, that is as powerful as Instagram. And the funny thing with Instagram is people don't go on Instagram to be sold to, but they do buy it on there. And I think if you think about it, I've noticed so many people that like did a lot of different channels. And then obviously, for example, TikTok is a great one for reach and stuff. but it's not where people are making their purchasing decisions. And that's just quite interesting as well. But I'm obviously talking for my niche. I'm not talking about big consultancies and obviously more the corporate world. But in the personal coaching industry, it is really Instagram where people are going to look into who's that person. Do I really want to work with that person? What are, you know, what's their life like and all of that. So that's a bit more about that. About my ideal clients and where you can find me.
I have a quick question, Thomas. Laura, you explained that you were combining your corporate job, which had a lot of potential, a very bright future, together with what you're currently doing as an entrepreneur. And you also mentioned the one of the drivers to decide to go for the entrepreneur part. Which was money, but as you also mentioned, money is not the most important thing. What other drivers did you take into account, and could you share a little bit your reflection process in taking the decision?
Okay, so to be honest, when I started my business, I never thought I was going to take it full time. I still even remember starting my business and the reaction of my parents immediately being, yeah, but make sure you don't leave your corporate jobs. Nothing around me was really pushing me towards that. That was for sure. So that was definitely not my intention. But then when indeed this one side, the coaching business, started blowing up, I was burning out. I was really having a hard time combining a 9-to-5, and it's not really a 9-to-5 because I did have responsibilities, and my business. And the thing is, with my business, I do work directly with clients. So you're in a customer facing role, and you have that pressure to have someone, you know, scale up their business, which is in the end a big responsibility. So it was a lot. During that time, I was really, and that is why in July, I had a moment where I was like, I'm dealing with a corporate job that is a sector that is in crisis mode, where people are getting fired, where you're getting more and more work because there's less workforce, where obviously it's not a happy show. I'm not going to lie. Like, obviously the crisis has hit so many businesses and it is a difficult place to be in. But then on top of it, I also had responsibilities in my business, and I was doing that on evenings and weekends. And yes, I'm young. Yes, I have a lot of energy and a lot of, you know, drive, but I also can't do that for months in a row. Like, you can do that for a couple of months, but then at some point you also hit your, you know, moment where you're like, you know, I'm too tired. I'm going to burn out if I keep going like this. And I do care about my mental and physical health. So that is not something that I wanted to go through. And then I did have to make a choice. I was getting so much energy from my own business, because I never thought I could be my own boss. That wasn't also my intention, but it was a nice feeling to know that I can indeed, you know, be successful with just having my phone and my laptop. I can live in Bali if I want to, I can, or in Portugal, or I, you know, like that freedom of, you know, building my business for wherever I am was for me a big one, because I've always been quite big on traveling. There's a reason that I start my career abroad as well. My boyfriend is English, for example, and he's literally a nomad in the sense that he has traveled way more than me in the past. So we have always had a bit of a dream of, I'd love to still move around. And that's why I actually did like my corporate job, because it is a global brand. And I had that opportunity to work global with this brand. But then I realized I don't need a company to work global. I can do this by myself, because I was doing everything for that perfect CV, perfect career. And I really genuinely think I was good at it. I mean, there's a reason that I was, you know, at a young age already in certain positions. But at some point, I also realized maybe I don't need all of that. Maybe I can have a bit more of a free life and make decisions for me. And indeed, maybe not end up in, let's say, Singapore or Dubai for my job, but end up maybe in Bali, where it's a third world. Life is chill. I can go surfing and I can do what I want to do and still build my business, because it's not like I'm someone that doesn't want to work. I want to work. But that freedom is still a very, and I think I'm being a typical millennial in that sense, right? Like, I am quite young. And that was, for me, I think, the decision maker to be like, okay, if I have to make a decision between the two, because obviously I'm going to burn out if I keep doing both, I would much rather like rely on my own here, have that freedom and have a bit faith in myself. And it is definitely a leap of faith, but see where I end up. And if it doesn't work out, like I'm 26, I'll see where I end up. I still have, you know, I can try this out for a year or two and still go back to corporate and have a great career in that if I want to, you know. At this point, the sector was at crisis anyway, so it's not like I was really missing out on a lot as well.
And there you say it. You said it several times. And Nick, you heard it as well, this magic word, freedom. Mm-hmm. I think you mentioned freedom three times, four times, if not even more, Laura. And that resonates naturally very much with us. You do know, Laura, that we are helping companies, also corporates, in unbossing.
Yeah.
And you do know that the pressure for unbossing, it comes from many sides, but amongst others, it comes from the HR departments, which are saying, if we do not unboss, if we do not liberate our people to do the jobs how they feel suited for it, we are not able anymore to attract the talent, which we used to attract 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Let's say we have a global brand name, and 20 years ago, it was fully normal. And maybe even at the time when you started studying, was fully normal. Oh my God, yes, I want to go to this global brand name. If I get an offer from there, of course, I will not think that over for 1 second. And now the question, Laura, imagine in a month, in 2 months, one of the absolute world-class global brand names comes to you and says, my God, Laura, you are exactly what we need. And now, seeing your experience now, corporate versus freedom, let's call it freedom, seeing your tremendous success also, which you have had now over the last couple of months and which will, without any doubt, go on further like a rocket, what would you do, Laura?
Yeah, I generally don't think I'll be going back to corporate. If I go back to corporate, it will be as an independent consultant, and I'll still be on my own and come in maybe 1 or 2 days a week max. I loved corporate and I was happy in it, but I think it is really difficult to go back to it when you are used to. I mean, I wake up when I want, I go to sleep when I want. If I want to go party, I don't right now, but like if I were to say, you know what, let's fly from Tuesday to Thursday and take a weekend in, I don't know, Milan and just do something for me, I can do that. Like it is a massive freedom to have. And also I am in charge of my revenue stream, which is a very big sense of freedom as well. I mean, there is location freedom, but there's also financial freedom. And for me to know that if I put this in, I earn this much. And obviously, it's not always going to be this linear. And it also needs to be that you have the right marketing and the audience to sell to and all those things. And that's what I help my clients with. But once you have that, I know for a fact that I can launch something and I can have a cash injection of, let's say, maybe 20,000, 30,000 euros in a month if I want that. And that is just, I mean, in the end, I am indeed still 26. For me to be earning that money in corporate in a month, that's impossible. And then I might be really great at my job. And obviously, again, money's not the only driver, but it is a massive sense of freedom to be able to say, hey, you know what? Like maybe in 2 years, I want to have paid off my house. I'm just going to hustle for 2 years. And by the time I'm 30 and I start a family, I will just be in a really good financial situation. And I can give my children a different life than me having to, you know, cut myself into 5 pieces, do the school run and then get on time at work. And then hopefully, you know, make sure that everything stays good at work so I can still have my fixed income. But like, you know, calculate around that, like this freedom for me comes in so many different forms and shapes. Like you are indeed so much more empowered and in charge of your life for so many different things. And I'm not going to lie, I work way more now than I worked in corporate, but it's what I love doing. It doesn't feel like work. And I am still, you know, generating what I want to generate or whatever, or I'm going on holiday when I want to go on holiday, or I can take a break whenever I feel like it, or do a nap at lunchtime when I feel a bit tired. Like it's still a massive sense of freedom.
Laura, the way you are explaining your experience is very familiar with studies on the future of work. Especially your reply that if you ever go back to corporate world, it will be as an independent, maybe 1 or 2 days a week. Studies on the future of work show that I think more than half of the working population in Belgium will be a millennial in 2025, and they will want to have different work for different companies at the same time. So yeah, it's very, very similar to what you're explaining. Now, obviously, corporations need talent. I mean, it's for the corporate world, it's a pity that your talent, that you are using your talents as you are doing now. But for a corporate, if I would be a corporate organization, I would try to understand what can I do to get people and attract people like Lara. What are your what would it be your advice with regards to, you have your needs of freedom, of empowerment. There's also accountability, because freedom comes with accountability. What would be your advice to unbossed leaders in larger companies in creating a context where people like yourself want to stay and choose to stay?
Yeah. And there I'm happy that I came from startup, because in startup I had a completely different life. I was indeed traveling in the middle of a week and I would still be working, and I had a massive sense of freedom. And I was a bit my own boss within a company, right? Like I could do that. So I think my advice would be is definitely try to incorporate a bit more freedom within your working culture. I think a great way to really look at it is, are people getting the work done? I think a lot of companies are still thinking old school, like I need to see them behind their desk to know that they're working, which I think I know for a fact. I mean, I've seen it more than enough myself, which is a shame, because I don't think that, for example, my generation works like that. I think my generation can be, there will be people that are maybe lazy and think that things come easy in life, but there will also be people that are super willing to work, but still want freedom and still want, let's say, maybe to travel while working. But most companies won't be able to give those opportunities, and then they might do their own thing, just like I did. So I think my main advice would be seeing however sense you can create more of a, first of all, flat structure. Doesn't mean that there cannot be any lines of hierarchy, but it does mean build a company structure where you can give feedback, where you can have an open discussion. Because I think if there's one thing from my generation that I can say is that we don't just take things and don't question it. I think we will often say, but why is it like that? And maybe we're a bit stubborn and we're a bit difficult. But in a way, I think critical thinking is not necessarily a negative thing. I think sometimes it takes a smart person to challenge something that is already in there and see how we can do it better. And I think if a company structure can allow for those things, you're going to keep your employees happier. And if you then on top of it can try to create some more of location freedom, a bit more flexibility to work from home. And obviously that's now coming into place because of, unfortunately, you know, COVID-19 and all of that. But I think that's the kind of companies of the future. There's a reason that, let's say, Google is always the employee of the year, company of the year in the US. It's because they have such a free company structure. They might be a massive, you know, company, but I know for a fact that any millennial would die to work for Google. So they did a pretty great job. Or same in startup. Startup is really known for that kind of flexibility as well. I still have a lot of friends in startup. They travel the world and they're in the best jobs. They get, you know, have really good advantages, and they're also working really well. The company's growing like crazy, but these people feel like they have their own company almost, that they are working as an independent consultant almost, but they're doing a great job because they have a sense of responsibility of, as long as the work is done, this works. And yes, it takes a bit of trust, but if people don't do the work, this all doesn't, you know, like it. I just don't, like, for example, I mean, the company that I come from is a lot more traditional, and I know for a fact that sometimes people might be all day at the office, but that doesn't mean the work was done. And I think it's just unfortunate that we hold on to these kind of traditional values of work and wouldn't work with the workforce that I see coming up now. It doesn't make them happy. It doesn't get results. And it's just going to lead to lots of job hopping from millennials, which is unfortunate.
Yes, but maybe that's what we need to the pain from for the organization of constantly having people leaving the company might motivate the company to start transforming the way they are doing things.
Yeah,
and I think exactly that's what's happening as we speak, right, Thomas? Oh, we don't hear you anymore, Thomas. No, there's a technical problem. No worries. I'll, so I think that's exactly what's going on as we speak in many organizations, and where the pain drives HR departments, but in general leaders to start to understand, okay, how can we then create a context for these millennials. But it comes with a lot of resistance. Yeah. He's back.
Nick, can you hear me again?
Yes.
Yeah, wonderful. Nick, exactly my point. So every corporate HR officer, every CEO listening to this, this is a tough call, of course. And the question, and Nick, we will ask it to the Novartis chief HR officer, which we'll soon have on the podcast. Are you willing and able to create such an environment which Laura was just describing? Because this is exactly the environment you need to attract talent like Laura. It is like it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have a final question for Laura, Thomas?
Yeah, I think let's go to our standard, Nick, which is, Laura, imagine I am a CEO who says, Laura, I got you. I understand you fully. I understand also Nick. I want to go into such a transition. I want to go into such a liberated environment. I want to give freedom to my people. What is the biggest pitfall? Also, I repeat, I'm willing. I'm genuinely willing to do something about it. But could you imagine what could be the biggest mistake which I, without intention, could do to make a mess out of it?
Huh. And you mean creating a more open company structure? How mistakes they make? Is it me or you hear echo?
Yeah, I'm also hearing echo. Thomas, can you shut down your? Yeah.
Thank you. It's hard to focus.
Still there.
Myself. Okay, that's better.
This is good.
Okay, so I think a mistake they can definitely make. I mean, for sure, we have to keep in mind that we're still in a corporate environment. So, one thing that also doesn't need to happen is that we have such a flat structure that people still don't feel like there is any, you know, direction coming from the management. I think at some point you still have to keep in mind, you know, you're still an employee and there's still someone else that is, let's say, the managing director of the company. And that is something that I've actually experienced myself in startup. It was a very flat structure. It was really free. But one mistake that I can say that I've lived is that the founder of the company put the pressure that he had as a founder on the entire team. And that is also a very big mistake to make, because yes, you want to give freedom, but at some point you also cannot expect, and that is, I think, more a startup problem than a corporate problem, but you can't put that pressure that you have as being the owner of the company on your staff. I mean, for example, me as well, I'm starting to hire people for my team as well. That is the one thing that I never want to do, is put that same pressure on an employee. I still know that they are, you know, doing a job in the end. And all that I want them to do is do their job well, but they are not going to be responsible for the success of my company in the very, you know, broad sense of it, and that they have to feel that responsibility on their shoulders. So I think that is still something to keep in mind. Yes, a free company culture is super important. But still keep in mind that it's up to you as a founder to make or whatever, because I'm not talking very startup, to build that team where people actually can feel also happy and don't feel too pressured either. Because it's just something I've noticed. With freedom often also comes a lot of responsibility. And there still have to be boundaries to a certain extent to make sure that, yes, you give freedom, but you also don't want to overwhelm all your employees to feel like they're as responsible for your company in the end.
Mm-hmm. Which is something that often happens when companies go into the direction of unbossing, that, we've been conditioned for 30, 40, 50 years to do what we have been told. And then all of a sudden you create a freedom to define yourself, what you want to do today. And as you mentioned, this comes with a lot of pressure, and it's not age dependent. I see it with young people and I see it with older people. It's just the complete change from a controlled environment to a trust-based environment. And from the availability of that freedom to decide for yourselves, we have to learn this. This is something you have to learn. You are learning it as you are going right now as well. You know, you are facing new problems that you would never imagined facing, and you're tackling that, and it comes with pressure. So I agree that it's up to the founder or the boss to create a context where people can learn to deal with that pressure and that responsibility. On the other hand, I do hope that the final goal is that everybody in the organization is working like you are working today. And that they are coping with that pressure, because that's also a big personal journey. It's personal development, you know. If there's no pressure, it's difficult to grow as a human being. So,
And that makes a good employee in the end, right? Someone that is able to take responsibility, someone that is able to fully own up to their job and be like, you know what, this is not just, you know, I'm doing this task and nothing else. I'm going to be solution oriented. I know I have to overcome this, so I have to do that. And that is, I mean, I know for a fact that that's how I was in corporate, and it is feedback that I've gotten a lot from managers that I've had, that it was almost as if it was weird. I mean, it was unseen in corporate, but I think that is because I came from startup and everything would become my problem. So I had still that very, you know, empowered kind of mentality that something was really like my problem and I wasn't going to just push it on to a different department. No, I had to solve it. And I think that is a great mindset to have. I just have seen the extreme sense of it, of having, you know, a team that falls apart because too much pressure. So I do think there should be boundaries and there should be KPIs put in place to, you know, keep people motivated, give them responsibility, give them freedom, but also not push the entire responsibility of a company onto just your employees because you said, hey, but you have freedom now. Like now you have to do this, you know, like there still has to be a few guidelines.
Absolutely.
I probably live both sides and that's why I'm saying this. Mm. But then again, that's where good HR comes in place, having, you know, a good, you know, framework in place to evaluate your employees and see who's doing well and who can improve on certain things while you give that freedom and have the right guidance and have good managers in place that have good people skills, which is hard to find in corporate managers. I'm very lucky. I had a great manager, well, a director that had good people skills, but they're hard to find. And I think that is, again, something that is maybe scaring some millennials away out of corporates, having a tough leader that has zero empathy to listen or to understand their employees or work together as a team.
Mm-hmm. Great pitfall to finalize, I would say.
I fully agree, Nick. Laura, this is a clear message which you are giving. This is a clear description of how an unbossed environment can and should look like. Nevertheless, this is a tough call for every corporate CEO and every corporate HR officer listening. And one thing is clear, and that will so quickly not change. Laura Haleit is lost for the corporate world.
she's on a mission.
Nick, another inspiring podcast. Do you agree?
Absolutely, Thomas. A young, inspiring, dynamic, energetic woman like Laura sends such a hopeful message. Is the future, and I'm very hopeful. This was fantastic.
I'm indeed still feeling the energy.
What are your key takeaways, Nick?
Well, the first one is how Laura is the living and breathing proof of how we will work in 5 years' time. Well, there are a lot of studies on the future of work in 2025, but listening to Laura, it's not 2025, it's already today. And just to give you, to reflect
back on the,
And to reflect, so some of the highlights of those studies on the future of work are that more than 50% in 2025, more than 50% of the working populations will be a millennial like Laura, with the same needs as Laura. Companies will have to be virtual and physical. Part-time retirement will be something very normal, taking time off to do other things. Millennials will travel more than any generation, these studies prove. And they will want to work for at least 17 companies in 5 industries. So at the same time for different companies, not being stuck in one company. So these are some of the highlights of those studies. And if you then listen to Laura, what drives her, how she wants to structure work, how she wants to organize her work in her time and her life. I mean, these studies are just spot on. And this is just an invitation. Like, guys, this is, we are building organizations for the future. And so for this type of population like Laura, and if we want to do so, we need to create a context of freedom, empowerment, flexibility, creativity, possibility to travel, and so on. Because if we don't do it, well, all of them will follow the path of Laura and just become an independent entrepreneur.
I fully agree, Nick. And for me, it was striking how often Laura was mentioning the word freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Freedom. And also the accountability. She's well aware of the accountability, because often you have older generations saying, yeah, these millennials, they want all the freedom, but they don't take into account what it needs, the other side of the coin. But I don't get the feeling with most of the millennials we are working with, and I definitely didn't get that feeling with Laura.
Right.
What was your key takeaway, Thomas?
Yeah. Nick, several things. First, I'm still amazed by this positive energy which Laura obviously has built up by her adventure of being practically her own company, despite all that pressure, despite all that external pressure, which is for sure, as we both know, higher than under a corporate umbrella. You really feel the energy. It's amazing, and shows me once again what unbossing can bring. The next thing, and now I start to reflect and put a bit myself in the shoes of CEOs who want to attract and keep talent like Laura. And in my mind, Nick, hearing that, this mountain, which was already steep, just became a bit steeper in my mind. This will be a tough call, I tell you. For many corporations I know, this will be a tough call. But unavoidable if I do not want to die a slow death within the next 10, 15 years. Because like you always say, organizations have to be built for people. And we just heard the voice of the people, at least the voice of the high potentials.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Nick, there was for me also one interesting point when Laura was speaking about the biggest pitfall in her mind. And that would be that when you are unbossed and you are as an owner or as a CEO, just think, give all the external pressure unfiltered, vroom, on the back of your people or of the team members. What's your take on that as a pitfall?
Well, it's first and foremost, it's a conditioned thought of Laura that that she's experienced in previous organizations where leaders indeed put the pressure on other people. This is a very traditional way of leadership. Right. And you basically, well, you delegate the pressure to the layer below you. You know, this is a traditional way of working. Now, an often made misconception is that in a non-boss organization, there is no leadership at all. Well, that's complete nonsense. There's absolutely leadership. But the role of the leader becomes something completely different. Instead of putting pressure on other people, you have to create a system, an organization system, where people feel the pressure themselves. You don't have to tell Laura to what she has to do. She feels the pressure herself. So putting pressure on other people to get the work done is no longer the role of a leader if you set up your unbossed organization system in the right way. And this role, this old role, is replaced with a couple of new roles that I want to mention. The first and foremost, well, if people are going to take ownership and accountability, they will feel pressure. It's part of their personal journey. And it's the role of the leader to really create a space where people, first and foremost, can share the fact that they have pressure and that they can talk about it, where you as a leader are also some kind of role model in stimulating that dialogue by also sharing what you are feeling pressure about, what you are insecure about, what you are afraid of, you know, and being this type of role model of some type of wholeness and inviting other people like, hey, it's okay. You're taking ownership. It's okay to feel pressure. It's normal. We need it, you know? And then a third role that I would like to mention is to make sure that once people are feeling that pressure, often what they will try to do to get out of the pressure is shift the problem back to the boss, you know, the old way of working. Oh, I have too much pressure. I can't handle it. I will shift it back. I will look to the boss to have for a solution. And in that context of pressure, as a boss, it's very tempting to take away the problem of the other person to solve the problem and the pressure. But this is not a sustainable solution because it will amount to what we have today in a lot of pressure on managers and burnouts. So what you have to make sure is that we don't go back into the old way, but we stay in that space where people take ownership, but also can talk about their pressures and their fears. And in such a way, it's a journey of personal development for everyone.
I think this is a wonderful conclusion, Nick. And I also think that we will both watch the further journey of Laura with much excitement and with much pleasure.
Absolutely. And now we're off to the next one.
Yeah, exactly.
Ladies and gentlemen, we hope that you've enjoyed this inspiring episode of the Unbossing Podcast. To round today's episode up, we would like to give the word to Thomas for a very special request.
Thanks, Nick. Dear listeners, if you would like to recommend to us other possible interview guests who did lead successfully or even unsuccessfully, interesting and inspiring projects where they liberated their people from bureaucracy, gave them more freedom in order to do their work and their passion, please feel free to contact us. You find the contact details on our website.